Bill Flores joins us this morning. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Thanks. I'd like for you to first comment on the revelations that came out in the CNN report having to do with the Veterans Administration facility in Phoenix. Obviously, since you're a member of the Veterans Affairs Committee, this is right in your wheelhouse.
Gosh, this was a huge disappointment for us to hear this. We've known for a long time that there are cultural issues in some parts of the VA, and the revelations that came out last week were just horrible. The VA has this culture where it doesn't address the issues of poor leadership. The person that was running that part of the VA out in Phoenix had actually had earlier in her career had another career ender type behavior, but she got moved to another location and then sat there for a while, and then they put her in Phoenix, and then we find this out. We had a meeting with several of the veterans, with virtually all the veteran service organizations in the country yesterday, and the subcommittee chairs and the chairman of the VA committee, and we promised them we're going to get to the bottom of this, and hopefully we're going to find a way to get the VA's attention so that we can get them to start taking care of our veterans. I think what this does do, though, it serves as a catalyst to bring up the question is, the big question is, how do you provide better and more timely care to our nation's veterans and still do it in a way that the taxpayers, where the taxpayer is getting value for the dollar? And I think by having this great big bricks-and-mortar VA structure, we have failed our veterans. And so I think we need to look outside the box and come up with a new model to deliver vet health care. We brought that up with the veteran service organizations yesterday, and usually they've always pushed back hard, but yesterday I think they were ready to talk about it because they realized the current system is failing our veterans.
Bill Flores joining us this morning. One of the things that I recall from a campaign, and I want to say it was maybe even before you were elected, that the idea was put forth that possibly entry level into the care system would not have to happen at a VA facility. It could just happen maybe at a clinic or a hospital in the hometown of the veteran, and then it moves over to the VA, because it seems like these were people basically waiting to be seen within the VA system. Is that a feasible idea, that there be a situation where the entry level into health care would not have to be at a VA facility?
Well, that's one idea. The other idea, and this came to me back in 2010 when I was first running for this seat, and it was based on a meeting I had with an 80-year-old veteran in Madisonville, Texas. He and his wife were standing in front of me, and she was like 78, and he was like 81, and he was complaining that he had to drive to Houston or drive to Waco to get health care coverage. And my thinking was, he asked me, he said, why can't I go to my local doctor here or for more advanced health care, drive over to College Station or Bryan? And I didn't have a good answer for him, so I started talking about, of course, Chet Edwards immediately ripped me apart for saying I was going to destroy the VA health care system. And so I think we need to look at maybe giving them a TRICARE card or some sort of an insurance card, and they go wherever the heck they want to. We still keep the VA infrastructure for the areas where the VA has centers of excellence, like traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress syndrome, crush injuries, burn injuries, polytrauma-type situations. But then the rest of the system, let these patients go out into their local communities to stick with the doctors they know. And we brought that up yesterday with the VSOs, the Veterans Service Organizations, and you, like I said, in the past they've always pushed back. Today I think they're ready to talk, because if you think about it, what is the goal? Is the goal to take care of bureaucrats, or is the goal to take care of veterans? If the goal is to take care of veterans, then you really are indifferent as to where they get their health care. You just want them to have great health care.
Now, when it comes to, again, because you began the conversation saying this may be a systemic situation. Here's a person who had not performed well before and yet eventually is elevated again to a decision-making position and has made another bad decision. What really can we do in this system, as big as it is, the federal government, the VA, as big as it is, how can we really ferret out the systemic problem and get this thing closer to being right?
Well, what we need to do is we need to have personnel policies where the employee, the senior level employees of the VA are at-will employees instead of civil service employees, where if somebody screws up, you do like you do in the private sector, and you go fire that person and you put somebody in that job that is capable of handling the job. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened. So we've got a bill in front of the committee now. It's actually in front of my subcommittee. It's called the VA Accountability Act. It's that gives the Secretary of the Veterans Administration almost carte blanche power to fire a sub-performing member of the senior executive staff, senior executive service. Now, Secretary Shinseki has pushed back on us and said he has that authority today. We're saying, well, hell, why don't you use it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a perfect example as to why this person should have never been in this position to be able to put the country in a position to lose 40 vets while they're waiting for health care. And so I think this particular revelation on Phoenix gives us, again, a catalyst to get that passed. And we better, you know, at this point in time, I've always been a big fan of Secretary Shinseki, but he needs to start waking up and using, if he's got the power, he needs to use it. And I don't really think he has the power. This law, this act, will give him that power, and now I would expect him to use it then.
Okay. Well, yeah, I can't think, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, I can't think anyone wants the veterans to not be able to get the care after the service that they deserve. So
I hope
we can move forward on that. Now, I know that you have a funding vote that's coming up. It obviously has nothing to do with this. This is appropriation rather than operation, but you do have a vote on the VA this week. Is that right?
That's correct. Today, actually, we're going to have the appropriations bill to fund the Veterans Administration for fiscal 2015 and also part of it for fiscal 2016. That bill will be on the House floor this morning. Tomorrow morning, we'll have our second of 12 appropriations bills, and that's the bill to fund the legislative branch for fiscal 2015. So we're starting the appropriations process. The earliest it's been started since 1974.
Well, that's
some things are working.
That's good. We're glad to hear that. Bill Flores joining us this morning from D.C. as the Congress gets back underway this week. A little bit of news yesterday about the Speaker deciding to talk to some Republicans who have not been happy with him in the way that he's handling the immigration issue. Were you part of that group? How do you feel like the Speaker responded, and what do you see coming out of this?
Yes, I was part of it. It happens, every week when we're in session, the first morning we're here, we have a GOP conference, and we had that yesterday. And the Speaker explained the remarks he made as well as the context of the remarks in the audience. And I was satisfied with his explanation as to what he was trying to do. As far as what he was trying to say, the media is always chasing him around, and they're always trying to find a way to take what he says and envelop it in controversy. And some of my colleagues grab onto that controversy and make a big deal out of it. And really, there just wasn't that much there, if you will, in terms of his comments that he made last week. But it always makes for, you know, good newsprint to be able to say that there's a big controversy in the Republican Party. I didn't get that same impression from what he said.
Well, it's a cottage industry. There are a lot of people make money off of that, so that's I guess that's the reason they have to do that. I'd like to get your comments on the situation as far as Representative Michael Grimm is concerned.
Well, you know, our government system, you were innocent until proven guilty. Now, the indictment that was handed down on Michael Grimm sure has a lot of smelly stuff in it. And if he's guilty of any of those, well, he certainly should not be serving as a member of Congress and probably needs to have some jail time as well. I think we're going to have to let this, wind through the court system. I think there was a little bit of politics played in the indictment because the indictment came out 2 weeks after the filing period had closed for the congressional seats in the state of New York. And so now we can't put a replacement for Grimm on the ballot, and his name will be on the ballot. And, you know, with this cloud hanging over him, it's likely that he'll lose that seat.
That's probably the only Republican seat in that part of the state, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
Know.
It's the only New York City Republican seat.
Interesting. Well, and then finally, over on the other side, the Senate may have a look at XL Pipeline again. We're starting to hear that rear its head. Harry Reid said that he may allow that to be a vote. The discussion we had this morning was maybe only with the possibility that the president wouldn't sign it. What are you hearing about what's going on in the Senate with XL?
Well, I haven't heard that much. I can tell you there are several energy state Democrats that would like to see that bill hit the Senate floor so they could vote for it. And Harry Reid, up until now, has been very careful about what he allows to the Senate floor. I'd love to see the House and the Senate pass a Keystone XL pipeline bill and send it to the president's desk and then watch him veto it. But I don't, I don't know whether Harry Reid will actually do that or not. He runs that place with a pretty tight fist, and so I doubt that he's going to put the president in a position to have to veto this. You know what most of America wants to see done.
Sure. Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning.
Great talk to you, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
Certainly. Thanks a lot.